Shut your mouth, pussycat, and follow me on macchiato. Pronto.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome back to Behind the Panels, issue 85. The comic book podcast, it's a little bit like Oprah's book club, but for geeks. So look under your chairs and you'll find your hosts. I'm rampaging Richard Gray.
And David McVeigh.
Everybody gets a star.
And that's David Longo.
That's Dave Longo. In this very first issue for 2014, we're back. It's the return of Chris Claremont. Expect a 12-part crossover series of his origin from Marvel. Then Ant-Man takes Batman versus Superman's old release date. That joke will write itself. Also, what we've been reading, we get tongue-twisted with the news headlines, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, The Dark Knight Strikes Again, by someone calling himself Frank Miller and Lynn Varley. This is Behind the Panels.
No one can save the day like Batman. Robin will make you sway like Batman. Beat for beat, rhyme for rhyme. Deep in Gotham, fight for crime. No one can save the day like Batman.
Commissioner X here. Batman and Robin, we have a bit of a problem. There's trouble ruining Gotham City. You must act fast.
Holy mackerel, Batman. I think these clowns need a backhand. Let's be the Gap Band. Drop the bomb on them and make them scat, man.
When you say scat, man, like the brother corrupt. When it's on, it's cold, so bring the core in the cover.
We can take it to the basement.
Yeah, boys, we're back in the hisses for 2014.
What's it's good? Been a long haul, guys.
I'm glad that I don't know what you're going to do. So I heard that for the first time now. That was amazing.
Deep double log G. That's what we're talking about.
So for our listeners out there, we should first apologize and say our 2-week break turned into a 3.5 or 4-week break.
Oh, I don't think we've been back for years.
But we have moved into the new studio and it's we're here. Mm. We're back.
And very gangster, apparently.
And there were those two podcasts we recorded, but we're never going to air.
No.
No. And again, Mother Superior, we apologize. I hope it has healed over.
We were trying to talk about Dark Knight Strikes Again before, but we got too you know, rage.
We actually had Frank Miller in for that episode, but we can never air it. So. we thought we'd come back strong this year with a book that is bound to be controversial. We'll probably apologize up front because we're in our new studio here and that we have actually got a few sound issues. We're still working those out. We're still working out how everything works. So if it doesn't sound quite like your regular show, that's probably why. But,
yeah, we're the studio is as pretty as it is, and if you look at my Facebook page, you would have seen a photo of it. Mm. Isn't quite finished yet, so yeah. We haven't got carpets down. It's not properly sound.
Well, if you think about it, it's perfectly fitting considering we're doing Dark Knight Strikes Again,
which is not finished.
Which there was a break between the two and the second one.
What happened was halfway through building the studio, David McVeigh had a complete mental breakdown.
Because he read Dark Knight Strikes Again.
But one of the things that we've been advised by his mental health counselling is to kind of bring in things that are familiar to him.
I believe we call that his team.
His team. So we thought we'll kick off the year with something familiar. We'll go into a bit of a vintage clip. So let's gently bring him into the Wayback Machine and see where we go from there.
All right.
Come along, fella. You're going with us to the Bat's Cave. Here we are, home sweet home. Make our friend comfortable. Don't you like our little place? We think it's very cozy.
What were those?
Just some of my bats. Hope they didn't disturb you, but you see, it's nearing their feeding time.
You don't mind being left here alone with him, do you?
I'm sure he won't.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
Where were you going with that radium?
to the house with the open door. That's a fluff joint.
Who hired you?
A guy named Smith. A medium-sized fellow with a mustache. Sandy hair and about 40 years old.
The name sounds phony. That description would fit 100 men. You've got to do better than that, my friend.
Oh, yeah. He had a knife scar on his right wrist.
Oh, that's better. What's his racket? What do you want radium for?
I don't know.
You're lying.
No, I'm not. I only do what they tell me to.
Well, make yourself comfortable while we're gone.
I've told you everything I know. Don't leave me here alone.
Don't be afraid of my little friends. They don't bite. That is, unless I tell them to.
That is, outside of Frank Miller's Batman, the most sinister Batman I've ever heard.
Did he say fluff joint?
I love how he's describing him, and he's like, oh yeah, and then he's got like a slash on his wrist. You know, and the swastika on his
neck. He's got a moustache. Yeah, no, yeah. He's got a moustache, see?
He's missing an eyeball.
And he has a superfluous testicle on his right
ear. He was as tall as Yao Ming.
That was 1943 Batman.
Yeah. I remember that cereal. That was the old black and white cereal where he drove around a sedan.
In fact, I think that's where we met in a fluff joint, didn't we? Oh, fellas, how are we?
Oh, we're doing good, yeah. Man. I'm so glad we're back.
It's nice to be back behind a microphone because normally I sit in front of it, which causes all sorts of problems. You don't know the half of it,
it's
really.
It's so weird because up until 2.5 days ago, there weren't even tables in this room, and now suddenly there's a studio. It's like, it's here.
What people don't know is what we used to record this in a disused brothel.
Fluff joint.
That was how we met. Yeah. I was fluffing Richard, and Richard was fluffing Dave, and we just had a laugh.
It was, yeah. And somehow out of that, we got 84 perfect episodes.
Oh, there you go.
So, look, I think it's...
It makes you wonder, though, what was in this room before Dave was in here.
Well, we know for a fact that there used to be two large snakes in this house at one point.
At some point, there is actually a snake
there are
pit.
Two
so.
Large, there are three large snakes in here now.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, it's been a long, cold summer. And we're using an explicit tag this year.
No, we actually haven't been explicit yet.
Though. No, we haven't. I think we'll keep the show tagless.
Mm. Yeah.
But just be aware that we've been holding our tongue a lot over the,
we're
going to
be dropping some single entendres before the show. particularly when we get to talking about the pick of the week. But we've been reading a lot, but we thought we'll do some what we've been reading. But let's kind of stick to what we've been reading recently, because otherwise we've been...
Oh, look, it's been so many weeks that there's no point in going back too far in time.
So I'm going to hit this button, which I think does this.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
I was right. It did do that.
It did. It did. Can I start us off by something, because we do have some reading material as well, just something we've been watching.
No, Dave, next.
I managed to catch, started watching Justice League War.
Ah.
The new animated film.
Digitally now.
Digitally through American iTunes. I'm not even sure if it's available here yet.
No, it's coming out on DVD next week in the States.
But it was actually very interesting because, and I don't want to put any spoilers out there, it is based on Justice League Origins, which is the first arc of the New 52. But what I thought was really the most interesting
did
part of
the
whole...
Did they change a lot of it quickly?
Yeah, they did. And the most important change, though, the one that I was about to hit was... They've just spent 2 years trying to make Aquaman cool and relevant again.
And then
for the movie, they cut him.
They just dump him, yeah.
They dumped him and put Shazam in, who doesn't actually appear in Origins.
And all the kids love Shazam. Yeah. All of them. The kids go nuts from...
Kids love Shazam. You know,
when I'm down at the playground on a weekday morning...
you just run in there and go, Shazam!
Before they ask me to leave, I say, hey kids, who's your favourite superhero? And some kids will go, Batman, Superman. But lately,
Shazam!
Lately, all I've been getting is, oh, Shazam! You know, bit of I'm Black Adam. Yeah, because, you know.
So what's interesting about the film is that they've changed, they modified and changed a little bit of Cyborg.
The schoolyard of the future. I'm Nova. I'm Rocket Raccoon. I'm just on a side note. Remember?
I am Groot.
It's going to happen. It's going to freak me out. Yeah. I remember working in the cinema when the new Star Trek came out and people were going, man, Captain Kirk is so hot. Man, like Spock is awesome. You know, like, and you're like, this is Star Trek you're talking about.
You're saying, Kirk, have we just stepped into 1966? What's interesting, though, is that they have modified the origin of Cyborg. So he's slightly different again. And they excised Aquaman altogether and put Shazam into his place.
So Shazam's underwater most of the time?
What's interesting, though, is that the very end of the film, there's like a little post-credit tag, and it's not really a spoiler to say that it's just basically an ad for the next film. Mm. And basically what they're setting up, if you've read the New 52 Justice League, is they're setting up the War of Atlantis, where Atlantis comes.
Yes.
But they cut Aquaman from it. So I'm sitting there going, wait a minute.
So maybe they're going to do like a big introduction for him there, and that'll be his movie.
I think they're going to have to do it that way. And hopefully, if they're really smart, they'll include the scene where he goes to the fish and chip shop, which
yes.
is the greatest scene, single scene in Aquaman
that
history.
Would be good, because that's how they made Aquaman interesting again in New 52. That first arc in Aquaman was really good.
Well, because they gave him a sense of humor about the whole thing as well. So that's what I've been watching. It is well worth having a look at. I don't think it is quite up to the same quality levels as, say, the Bruce Timm stuff.
Right.
But it's not bad. They really did capture that dynamic, though, of Green Lantern being completely cocky and his relationship with Batman. You know, that whole, oh, you're real?
Yeah. Well, the next one coming up is Batman and Son. We'll be playing a little bit of that clip later in the show. So I'm looking forward to that. But reading, look, it's been a big year for releases of comics already, mostly thanks to Marvel because of all the all-new Marvel Now.
The Marvel Now.
It's the all-new Marvel Now. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, they're actually doing this properly. They're not just, like, rebooting series randomly. They're actually introducing some new series. Some series are continuing, you know, and other series that are coming to an end of one arc will be rebooted as another, like Daredevil. So a lot of stuff's come out. Avengers World's already out. Black Widow's come out, which we've all...
I had a look at Black Widow. I quite liked Black Widow, actually.
I love the art. Phil Noto is one of my favorite artists.
Oh, beautiful. So. I love the face they've given Black Widow. I think she's just really unique looking with the little mole on her. They've gone to that detail level the mole on her nose and the whole bit.
Phil Noto's amazing at drawing women.
Yeah.
That's like kind of... He just excels. Like, he always does beautiful art, but when he has a strong female character in the lead, whether it's... he's doing the covers for Ghost or whether he's doing... his own creator-owned stuff. It's always phenomenal.
And the arc for Black Widow is basically continuing on the film universe with the whole idea that she's got red in her ledger.
Yes.
And so she's just basically, the whole book is about her repenting.
Mm.
So when she's not avenging, when she's not working for S.H.I.E.L.D., she's off doing these things on her own to clear her own conscience.
So it's a gorgeous book. The other big one that came out this week from Marvel was the all-new Invaders. And this is bringing back the four World War II characters of the original Human Torch, Namor, Captain America, and Bucky Barnes, but he's now the Winter Soldier. And it's, you know, it's a story that brings the four of them together in this initial one. I really liked it. I really, really liked it.
I haven't had a chance to read that yet. I really
like the way they brought that one together. That's really good. We should give a shout out to Laramie Taylor, of course, who had the third issue of Voice in the Dark out, continuing this perpetually twisty storyline that he's been presenting us. I really like his sense of humor, because there's a really great moment in the third issue where, after the events of the second issue, which I won't spoil, one of the members of staff has sort of saved her from her show being cancelled, and it's just a little voiceover. It's like, you know, I'm finding it, she goes, wow, this person's being really nice to me. I'm really finding it hard to suppress the urge to strangle her at the moment, you know. You know, just because she's got this overwhelming sense to kill people. It's kind of like, I really don't want to strangle her, but I kind of, you know. I just really love the way Laramie has that. There's a really dark twist of turn of phrase, even if it's just in a side bubble. Well, great series, keep going. If you haven't checked out Voice in the Dark yet, Laramie's just sent me a copy of the fourth issue, which I've forwarded on to you guys, so... We'll be reviewing that closer to its release date in mid February.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to give that a quick shout out. Another one that came out this week was Deadly Class, which is a new Image book.
I have this. I haven't read it yet.
And this is by Rick Remender, who seems to be on a roll at the moment with the new stuff. The art is beautiful by Wes Craig, and beautiful colors by Lee Luffridge. This basic story of this, it starts in the 80s about this kid living under a bridge. He's homeless, and you kind of get the background that his parents were kind of wrapped up in the spy business and they were killed in front of him, and now he's an orphan living on the streets. And then everything's sort of going wrong. He's about to end it all, and he's recruited by this mysterious guy who wants to train him to be an assassin.
Right.
And that's kind of that's where the story, and he takes him to this underground school that he has. And that's where we open up. So it's a really, really, really interesting concept. And I think this is one that we should definitely follow this year, because It's a very, very cool new title. And Image seemed to be having another massive year.
And speaking of stuff we need to keep following this year, number 2 of Harley Quinn came out this week, which was pretty solid again. I got to tell you, Palmiotti is fast becoming one of my favorite writers at this point. For those who don't know, because we didn't know, because we completely ditched it, he took over Batwing as well a few issues back, and he's completely reinvented Batwing and made it a readable book. So
have to reinvent it to make it readable.
Well, he starts his story by basically what's his name, David, whatever his name was, who was Batwing, basically resigns and goes away, and Palmiotti starts it with a brand new character, and it's Lucius Fox's son, and he's got a whole new suit and a whole new thing, and he's got much more in contact with Batman, and off it goes, and it's actually got a sense of humor, and it's good. So you go, hey, here's a book I can read now, you know. So Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, of course, also went on to do the Harley Quinn.
Did Amanda Connor draw issue 1? I can't remember.
No, she drew the first two pages, I think,
and of the zero issue. Yeah.
Issue 1 and 2 are not by her.
Yeah.
She's just a writer. But the art style is very... very comical. Mm. Very much... You can see that she's had a hand in recruiting the artist. Mm. But the humor in it is great. This issue, the latest issue of Harley Quinn, introduces Poison Ivy into it. And Poison Ivy has basically come to stay with her and have a girls' night with her, which
they're
is
basically
pretty funny
in
stuff.
A relationship.
You can kind of there's a lesbian overtone there, absolutely.
I think it's more than an overtone. It was implied to me.
It's an overtone.
It's right there.
Chad Hart is the artist on this.
Oh, there you go.
Very, very, very big. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and it is very. It's a kind of just shy of what Amanda Connor does, but it is that cartoony kind of cheeky little art style to it. One of the things I definitely have to mention is before we go on to Marvel's first event for the year, Dave, have you been keeping up with Snyder's Batman?
Yes. Like, this is the only thing I've read, actually. I read Harley Quinn 2 and
I
the
read
new
Snyder's
Batman.
New Batman as well.
Because we're up to issue, we're up issue 27. Actually,
I'm getting sick of it, to be honest, because we all know that the Batman 27, the whole Year Zero thing, right?
Yeah.
We all know that that is a flashback already.
Yeah.
And so all he does is does a flashback within a flashback. Yeah. Yeah, like every single issue so far.
Well, and the only reason he is doing this is so he can maintain control of his book while Forever Evil is going on.
Yeah, I know. I think that's...
And,
yeah.
And okay, I give him credit for trying to maintain his book while Forever Evil is going on. But God, can we just get back to the story?
Can we just have a panel without dialogue just once?
Yeah.
And like, can he get a good editor? He can do this while Forever Evil's going on. Yeah. But
can I
look, like, this is the example I'm talking about, right? Like, right now we just spent like what, 5 minutes just talking about this book, right?
Yeah.
Like, whereas we could vocalize it just by saying it's crap. But we don't. We take like 5 minutes to talk about it. This is like what Scott Snyder, Freudian slip theirs. Freudian penis.
Don't you mix him up with our snack.
Snack attack. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing. It's like he'll have a panel in there where it'll be like a dialogue explaining you how Commissioner Gordon drives a boat, and it's just like...
Although,
yeah,
I gotta
I
say...
I can see in the image that he's driving a boat, just get
although
on with it.
Why I do have I to say, though, that scene with Commissioner Gordon on the boat, where Commissioner Gordon explains why he's helping Batman, is probably the best written part of that entire book. Mm. That's a beautiful monologue, because Commissioner Gordon just kind of lays it out by saying he was on the take, he felt guilty because of Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne, and then to find Bruce Wayne and his parents shot and felt guilty because he wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, that is a great monologue.
That's Yeah, and it really does change the dynamic between the two of them. I really do like that moment. But
it'd be good without the pictures.
So speaking of which, quickly mention, a couple of weeks ago, Detective Comics 27 came out. This was the big...
Gothtopia.
Well, the Gothtopia was introduced in that, and I could care less. But what we did see in the back pages of that was a new story by Scott Snyder with art by Sean Murphy, which was great. And it was like Batman Year 200.
Right.
And it was just phenomenal. This really Japanese influenced story where they had like sort of samurai kind of characters in there and giant mecha Batman versus giant mecha owls. And it was just really cool. So that's just a little one-off vignette. Awesome.
You know what makes me mad about events? This is what makes me mad about events is the fact that I read my Batgirl, because I love Batgirl, and I think Gail Simone is doing a stellar job on Batgirl. And this week's Batgirl that just came out is all Gothtopia. And there's no background on it at all. They just throw you straight in there. And there's a little line at the bottom, which is Shades of 1980, that says, for more information, see Detective Comics 27. It's you bastard.
It's kind of meant to be like, the Gothtopia is kind of meant to be like that. Like, suddenly everything's bright and shiny.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like one of those hey, it's kind of like Flashpoint in that sense. It's like everybody just wakes up and everything's different. But event, because we're running out of time, the event, the big event that started this year for Marvel, Trial of Jean Grey.
Yes, I haven't read these
yet. The first issue is out, and this it goes between all new X-Men and, strangely enough, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. So I now have to read all new X-Men again. So I started on that. All new X-Men 22, point now, I think, is the first issue in that.
And luckily enough, I'm not that far behind because I did read Battle of the Atom.
Yeah.
So look, I'm only about two or three issues behind. So.
Spoilers for the final page, people, because I love this moment. I have to share it, which is the big things happen with Jean Grey involving the Shi'ar, and then a second ship turns up, and it turns out, and the X-Men get ready to fight them, and it turns out the Guardians goes, "Hi, I'm Peter Quill, and we're the Guardians of the Galaxy." And, oh, we're too late, aren't we? And it was just this perfect little Guardians moment. It's like Bendis perfect, actually getting what the Guardians are about. And I think he's actually found the balance in the main title, because I've caught up with
those. I'm actually quite enjoying Guardians at the moment.
Guardians good, and Angela's not making a bad addition to the mix at the moment.
She's an interesting character because her and Gamora have an interesting relationship.
They want to be like BFFs now.
Yeah. So. I quite like that relationship. I quite like the fact that they keep hassling Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
Yeah. So
Rocket's constantly on the back foot, back paw.
Yeah, back paw.
No, it's good. I'm enjoying it. And I think they're obviously positioning Guardians to be a bigger title because the movie's coming out in less than 6 months now.
Yes.
So, God. I said to someone the other day, I think on Twitter, that I am a mixture of squee-inducing excited and pants-wettingly terrified.
that sums that it up so perfectly.
Because,
though.
Oh man, I want that movie to be so good because I want 3 Guardians of the Galaxy films.
And I want everybody in the world to be introduced to Guardians.
Yeah.
Because Guardians is one of those great overlooked books because it was part of the cosmic universe.
And look, the thing is, Guardians could be so good if they get it right. We've said this before on the show. It could be the Star Wars for our generation if they get it right, despite the fact that we will be having another Star Wars for this generation starting next year as well. But I want it to be good. I'm just so afraid it's not going to be. And I mean, look, Marvel haven't let us wrong yet. But fingers crossed anyway.
Yeah. Look, this is for me, I thought Thor was going to be their big gamble. I think this is their big gamble.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And I'm waiting to see what happens. So
they haven't slipped yet. They've actually made, it looks like we'll probably get a third Thor.
Because at least with Thor was still a superhero.
Yeah.
And you could kind of buy into any weird origin that he had because he was going to do superheroics. This is straight science fiction.
If all I need to do is start heavily plugging this as Space Avengers and people will get it. I think, because people, I think, will have trouble conceptualizing who are the Guardians, why should I care?
Yeah.
But if they sort of tie it strongly into that Marvel universe and say Space Avengers, people go, okay, yeah, I get that. It's a team of superheroes in space.
I think it all rests on the first trailer, I think. Yeah. You know, like Inception? Remember the lead up to Inception? Like, the hell are we going to do here, you know? And then that first trailer everybody was in. You know?
Well, which I think we're actually getting early February, there's going to be a trailer with the Super Bowl.
Oh.
So that will be the first look. So they're going
to
be
the cut down trailer, and then they'll release the full trailer.
That's right. But you know, for the majority of Americans, who, let's face it, are the core audience for this, because they're the only audience that matters.
Apparently, not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore. Yeah. But the first glimpse will be during the Super Bowl, which, as we know, is the largest viewed television show in the state. So. I think we'll be looking forward to that. So I think that's the first weekend in February, I imagine.
Excellent,
so
excellent.
Very, very much looking forward
I can't wait to see.
That's like next week, I guess.
I want to see, some.
So hopefully we'll be coming back next. Oh, we're probably not next show, but the show after.
I want to see some high-def Guardians footage. We've all seen the bootleg stuff from.
Seen some stills. When we start seeing some stills, we'll know the trailer's forthcoming. But we've literally seen nothing. This has been
There's no poster, even.
Nope.
Yeah.
No poster. No. Not even
now
a
this is where this is where it becomes shudder-inducing horror because
if they're not showing us,
Disney
yeah.
doesn't know how to market sci-fi.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
so,
oh no, John Carter did find it.
Lone Ranger was set in space, right?
Yeah. That's how I remember it. That's, all right. I think if I remember the show correctly, I think we go on to some news headlines.
It's been a while.
Yeah. See you, Dave.
I stole that bit from Kevin Smith, so sorry.
All right, let's see what happens if I do this.
Mm-hmm. Marvel has solicited the death of the Watcher and the return of the Amazing Spider-Man, Iron Fist, Elektra, Hulk, Nightcrawler, and Dupe Solo's series for April 2014. Our good friend Chris Claremont will be returning to pen Nightcrawler.
Meanwhile, DC will launch the weekly Batman Eternal and the ongoing Justice League United in Canada. Sinestro plus Aquaman and the others for April this year.
Image will debut Jason Aaron's Southern Bastards, Joe Keating's Shudder, J. Michael Straczynski's Dream Police, Ed Brisson's The Field, and more that month as well. What a big month.
Yeah, Dark Horse has announced that a second series of Amala's Blade will debut later in 2014. Check out the first trade paperback in stores now because I'm quoted on the cover. Yay! My first comics full quote. Yay!
Simon Kinberg has completed the Fantastic Four reboot screenplay with actors testing this month.
Jesse L. Martin has been cast as Detective West, the father of Iris West in CW's The Flash.
Mm. Titan will release an all-new line of Doctor Who comics this year, featuring the adventures of the 10th, 11th, and even 12th Doctor.
Take that, Malekith the Accursed. Batman vs. Superman has been delayed until 2016, presumably so that Warner can cram more characters in sideways.
And just as a big stuff you DC, Marvel's Ant-Man has taken Batman vs. Superman's old release slot on the 17th of July 2015, bumping the release up by 2 weeks.
And finally, keeping with the Batman theme for the week, Warner Brothers Home Entertainment has released a trailer for the Son of Batman? Or is it? Yeah, Son of Batman, not Batman and Son.
Batman and Son would have been better.
Yeah. But made it like Steptoe and Son.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Batman and Son. Bum, bum.
And based on, of course, we've got the foremost Grant Morrison scholar in the room, Mr. David Anthony Longo. And Andy Kubert, who's for the sake of this plug,
sure, why not?
David McVeigh's favorite artist. Here's a taste of the trailer.
Talia, what do you want?
My father's dead.
Rache.
Assassins plan to take over Rache's organization.
Ra's al Ghul has been retired. You may call me Deathstroke.
This man wants to kill us.
Us?
Me and your son.
Son, things have changed. She thinks you'd be better off with me.
Are you fine by myself? Deathstroke killed my grandfather. He has to pay.
We don't kill. He's gone. Took the uniform, too. I have your mother, Damien. I'll give you 48 hours before I end her suffering. You're letting vengeance guide your actions.
It's easier my way.
Your play, Damien.
I'll drive.
No.
I know how.
No.
Chicks dig the car.
Well, that looks pretty awesome.
That's not how I imagined Damien sounding, but yeah, I'll go with it.
Well, Neither did I.
You know what? I didn't expect him to sound like that, but when you actually hear him sound like that, you go, that makes sense.
That's sense. He's a kid. Batman and Son was the name of the comic. So
I'm Googling that right now.
I wasn't far off, so I knew that came from somewhere. So I'm glad that they're still making non-New 52 films as well.
Yeah, me too.
So they're still making stuff based on the classics.
We still wait for the Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Hey, they should animate it in like really bad Flash.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see the Killing Joke. Killing Joke is the one I'm waiting for.
In really bad Flash?
Yeah.
No, and funny thing is, Bruce Timm himself has actually said he would come back to for the Killing Joke.
A Killing Joke I want to see. I'd like to see Quiver.
Oh, Quiver would be great.
Stuff like
that. I just realized they're all animated in really bad Flash already. So
Not the Batman stuff.
The Dark Knight was awesome. Yeah.
All right.
It's the Marvel stuff you're thinking about.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, we've been teasing it long enough now. I think it's time we get into our KA...
Maybe we could just skip it.
KAPTW, or the Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
All right. Strikes Again.
That's right, the Kick-Ass Pick of the Week. Strikes Again.
DK2.
DK2. Have you seen
the DK rap from Donkey Kong? Donkey Kong 2 is what we're reading. Yeah. DK... Donkey Kong.
It may as well be, dude. So let's just get into it. For better or for worse, it's the Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Frank Miller and Lynn Varley's The Dark Knight Returns is arguably one of the greatest graphic novels ever written. This is not that book. Published almost 15 years after the original classic, The Dark Knight Strikes Again returns to Miller's original themes of an aged Batman fighting for injustice in the streets of an authoritarian world. What started as a celebration of superheroes changed into something darker with the events of September 11th, 2001. This is an older and different Frank Miller. This is The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
There you go, boys. That my first was intro for 2014.
Amazing.
That was brilliant, and you couldn't have summed it up any better.
Right. Da-da-da-da-da.
That's it. We're done.
We're done. Okay, look, this is...
Let me just start by saying this is essential reading. You've got to read this book.
And in fact, it's released... I've got, in front of me here, picking it up, The Absolute Dark Knight, which contains both of them in here. So we're talking about a 17,000-page book here. I'm not exaggerating. It's quite a large book.
17,000.
It's really big. Yeah.
No, 17,000. It's a large book. No, I don't know how long it is. But it's a very, very large book.
It's like the size of a large Bible.
The original, I've also brought along here, Dave Longo's holding them at the moment, which of course you being in podcast land can't see.
First editions, people.
But each issue is like a trade of today.
It's like a graphic novel.
Basically,
it's a trade. Yeah,
it's
a trade.
They're all prestige format. They're all about 60-odd, 70 pages.
I think there are 83 pages.
83 pages,
find.
There you go. Thank you, David.
If you were like standard issue size.
The reason
like
I know that
issues,
is because I read them digitally from Comixology. And you can actually see the page count as you're going.
Oh, there you go.
And it starts and goes, you're on page 1 of 83. And I went, oh.
So look, the basic story here is where we left in The Dark Knight Returns was that the Joker was dead, Batman's fought Superman, gone underground, started this underground army.
Training his army.
Yeah. That's where we're thing. We come back
so
years
basically,
later.
Just want to interrupt you, sorry. We ended perfectly.
We ended perfectly, yeah.
Can I also say that we didn't need to come back?
No, well, look, this is the thing. I mean, apparently he had planned to come back earlier. There's all sorts of stories around this, but he didn't come back because of September 11th, but September 11th, it was a big factor in the middle of this. And you can actually see this, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But really, the basic story around this is that they're still fighting the good fight. Carrie Kelly Robin is now Catgirl.
Yeah.
And with
big ass feet.
With big ass feet, yeah. Hands and feet are not something that Frank Miller got better at drawing over the years. They basically, because there's this whole, even though superheroes have gone underground, there's this whole movement where superheroes are chic and hip again, and there's these Wonder Chicks who are kind of like selling everything. From medication through to,
one of them looks surprisingly like Black Canary.
Yeah, exactly right.
News in the nude.
News in the nude.
Well, which is funnily enough, we actually had
Naked
News for a long period of time.
I want to point this out now because one of the things in this, and also certainly in Dark Knight Returns, was like this dystopian future where kind of like cable news had gone mad and really, really the pundits were extreme. I don't think Miller went far enough.
No.
Because Fox News and the likes now are way more extreme.
Well, and the interesting thing is with this book is I think that we talked about, let's get really down to the nuts and bolts of this book.
Yeah, so before we go on, which is basically Batman and Catgirl basically use that chicness and that movement to start a movement, basically.
Basically, yeah.
And in the midst of that, there's an invasion that's not an invasion, and there's a big battle.
And they start to bring back the old Justice League.
It's like Lex Luthor polluting the US government.
And it all goes wrong in every sense of the word.
Now, in the first issue of this book, Miller is fairly grounded in the first issue of this book. It's nowhere near the quality of the first Dark Knight Returns, granted, but he's fairly grounded, and he's pretty much doing this very counterculture message. He's talking about the fact that the president might not be real. He might be computer generated, and everything is run by big business. This goes against his right wing kind of mess that we know a little bit about today.
Yes,
but he is really saying society's kind of messed up here at this point.
Yeah. His politics are very confused.
Childlike. It almost felt like his politics were a little bit clearer in that first issue, though, than from issue two. And from issue two, September 11th happened. And quite frankly, I think we are witnessing, over the course of these three issues, we are witnessing a nervous breakdown in progress. Mm. And I think that, like Dennis Miller, I think Frank Miller is basically having this massive crisis of conscience. He's having this massive turn of politics. He's having this massive overwhelming depression that is overcoming him. And he just took it out on the page. And my God, did he take it out on the page, because it literally, Richard's bright. You can actually see a point in this book happen where it literally, his art style goes from okay to stick figures.
Yeah. I mean, let me just read out something quickly from his introduction in 2006 to the Absolute Edition, where he says, he talks about the first volume and he says, 15 years passed, I found out. I was halfway through The Dark Knight Strikes Again when the Twin Towers collapsed and thousands of my neighbors were slaughtered. Keep in mind, Frank Miller is a native New Yorker. Mm-hmm. I'd planned the book as a celebration of the superhero, an affectionate romp with the icons of my childhood, laced, of course, with mockery of how the internet, for all its value, had somehow lowered the level of public discourse beyond TV's depths. I had to take a crack at the cyber tower of Babel. But in the first, but it was first a Batman story, a superhero story, and in writing and drawing it, not knowing what was coming, I had Batman fly his Batmobile into a skyscraper and had a giant robot gut down Metropolis. Then 9/11. Hence the abrupt change in tone towards the apocalyptic, right smack bang in the middle of the story. Since the media is so much a subject of the Dark Knight series, I wanted the transition to be jarring and raw. I wanted the brightly clad heroes and their readers to taste that awful chalky dust that filled every New Yorker's lungs for months. But I never forgot what my job really is. The heroes do what they must do. They persevere, or they perish trying. And the media, or they leave us all. Leave us. Say we've heard plenty enough about Paris Hilton. So that was Frank Miller's take on the abrupt shift. Mm. I think from a reader, I think he's being awfully kind to himself. Mm.
Well, I think you're also looking at that. That's written 5 years later.
Yeah.
So 5 years later, you've got hindsight is 20/20. You know what I mean?
And that's it, but actually, let's take it another 5 years. After that, yeah. 2011, his politics had shifted again. This book, as I said, the basic premise in this is using a movement as a using a fad.
I know where you're going. Yeah,
using a fad as a catalyst for a movement. They actually use those words in here. Let's take it to his last blog post of in 2011. Now, this is about mid-2011. Everyone's been too damn polite about this nonsense. The Occupy movement, whether displaying itself on Wall Street or in the streets of Oakland, which has, with unspeakable cowardice, embraced it, is anything but an exercise of our blessed First Amendment. Occupy is nothing but a pack of louts, thieves and rapists, an unruly mob, fed by Woodstock-era nostalgia and putrid false righteousness. These clowns can do nothing but harm America.
And I remember Alan Moore's response to that as well.
So we've got three very distinct Frank Millers over the course of the last decade.
Yes.
This is a really, really interesting, as I think you said, David, an interesting exercise in reading the fracturing of a mind.
It's literally a nervous breakdown over 160 pages.
We're about 10 pages into issue two, and you will see that the figures, the drawing becomes almost stick figure-like. It's basically circles with bulging eyes on them. Dave, you were pointing out before that Wonder Woman, one of the icons of the DCU. How did you describe her being drawn?
Wonder Man.
He has always drawn very masculine women. You look at Elektra.
But it's not me being misogynistic. Like I feel the need to. Like,
I know exactly.
See my women attractive. It's not like that.
Yeah, but it's the super chicks as well.
Yeah.
Are curvy, curvaceous women.
And I think
it just feels really troubling to me that he, because he's clearly personally designed her to look like this.
Like a dude.
Yeah, it's symptomatic of something else.
Well, she was but made of clay, same as man in the classic sense of the thing. Mm. You look at 300, you look at his Elektra, both, you know, Greek goddesses in that.
Basically what I'm saying is he chose to crap on her.
He did. He actually says,
artistic choice.
You pointed out in the back of this that there is a a little sketch that he draws in the back, and he talks about Wonder Woman and his daughter. Of course, she's a bitch. His words, not mine.
And quite frankly, Kara is.
Very misogynistic. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to the aforementioned Laramie Taylor on Twitter about Frank Miller. And I said, oh, yeah, you two should collaborate. And he goes, oh, I don't know how to draw whoers, you know.
Oh, ho, like, ho, ho, ho.
But the thing is, you know, every Frank Miller woman, not every Frank Miller woman, but
nearly all of them,
a large majority of them are what we would call quote-unquote whores in Frank Miller's parlance. He often uses, you know, there's this very, very simple dichotomy. You're either a goddess or a whore.
Was 300 written before or after Strikes Again?
I think it was before. I think 300. Let's have a quick look.
The reason why I ask is because the central female figure of 300 is a strong female figure.
Mm-hmm.
The wife. Yeah.
Well, there's Elektra as well.
And Elektra.
It was much before. It was 3 years before. It was 1998. Well, there you go. Yeah.
So that's before his nervous breakdown.
Yeah. And Sin City, you can kind of see it as a choice, like,
because Sin City is
part
very,
of that genre, and
also, you know, all the women in Sin City are whores, basically.
But I mean, there's kick-ass women in it too, I guess, to an extent.
Yeah, but I'm saying that they it's like a culture. Mm. They defend themselves. Remember that's a whole grouping of women.
I guess I find it troubling more so because
I find Frank Miller,
all the other women are shown to be drawn as the typical, you know, cliched superheroes. You know, big bust, tiny waist. On two extremes, except for Wonder Woman.
She looks like she belongs in La Girls.
Yeah, and then Wonder Woman and Superman's daughter, which is a character in this story, is also drawn to be without features.
And what I thought was really interesting about Superman's daughter, Kara, was that not only is she drawn fairly featureless, but she's also such a bitch.
I mean, but we talk about art. We're going to get to issue three.
I love the aliens. I'm sorry.
Aliens are just green, shapeless creatures. Like, there's no, and he doesn't even bother with backgrounds anymore at this stage. I think Grant Morrison talks about this on one of the, I think it was in an interview possibly with Kevin Smith. He just talks about, you can see that Frank just doesn't care.
No.
And I think, Dave, you were describing it before, so it's almost as though someone's laying flat on a table. How did you describe it?
When you're drawing, you're supposed to draw on a slant, because when you draw flat on the table, it creates a perspective of that you won't see until you bring the paper up.
Yeah.
And I feel that Frank Miller was just lying faceless. Yeah, what was
with Saturn Girl?
Saturn Girl's got these big anime eyes, you know? It's just... There's just so many different Frank Millers in here. And then you almost get back to a sense of normalcy by the end of it. You can see...
it's almost like he wrote that first.
Batman gets back to looking like Dark Knight Returns Batman, you know?
I just want to say quickly, talk about the politics of this book. I won't go into too much detail, but I find it really troubling. And I think that, you know, the Wall Street, the Occupy movement, the whole point of political movements is that the people themselves uprising don't necessarily know what they're talking about.
Mm.
But it illustrates that there is a problem and that there is something to be upset about.
Yeah.
There's a discourse. That's the whole purpose, right? But here you have Frank Miller complaining about, which is essentially the same thing. Because I don't think Frank Miller knows what his own political beliefs are.
No,
he's rambling about whatever in this.
No, but the thing is, I think he
doesn't really know what the problem is.
I think he does know what his political beliefs are now. I think what we're seeing on this page,
in
this book, yeah. I think we're seeing a man who literally, his world has been turned upside down.
He's exactly like the people he's bashing, the movement people. He's like fighting something that he's not really sure
his
what
world
is,
has been turned upside down. He's having a nervous breakdown. He's trying to deal with it all, and he's dealing with it by literally vomiting it onto paper. Yeah. And it makes no sense. I still don't even understand some of the things that happened in this book.
I think the Guardian got it right when they were writing about this back in 2002. They said there's flashes of brilliance. Few can control page layouts like Miller, because Frank Miller at his best is phenomenal. And you
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns. But you see, we talked about it. You see moments that there are moments in this book that are amazing. And you can't. That's what's so frustrating about it. That you can see old school Miller certainly in the first book.
Yeah.
And then, as we said, towards the end of the third one, you can see he's kind of coming back up. But they go on to say, but in general, the idea of the ironic superhero seems rather dated. And I think that's a really good point, because since Dark Knight Returns, 1986, how many people have done the sort of postmodern ironic superhero?
Well, we had Watchmen and stuff that as well, yeah.
We had Watchmen since then, but you had Warren Ellis, and you've had all those people, you know, Grant Morrison, you know. Ooh. Everyone's done the postmodern, the ironic superhero in that period. We have a very different view. In fact, Dark Knight Returns was such an influential book. It literally changed the landscape.
Yeah.
You know, few books can claim to that. You know, there's only a handful of books where you can say, you know, the two we've just mentioned, you know, Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns are two books you can point to and go, look, they literally, there are so many books that have copied or just followed that had to do something different because the game had been elevated. And very few have ever reached those. We're talking about books that are 30 years old now. or 25 years
they're
old.
They're not surpassed.
That have not been surpassed. They're just full stop.
Yeah. Can I ask you guys a question? What is it about Dark Knight Returns that makes that a classic? And year one?
Year one? Well, I think it's taking a character that was familiar, turning that character on its head, giving us something that we hadn't seen before, but also, I think more simply than that, good story, good art, good characters, full stop.
And did you find that in this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, and that's the difference. And I think it doesn't even make it even more upsetting that
the difference
this
with,
is from the same guy.
The difference
if
is
this was book, a normal
Yeah, but the difference with this, the difference with this book is that it's years later. We didn't need it to start with.
No.
And secondly, it was sabotaged. For lack of a better word, what he originally set out to create was sabotaged by a terrorist attack, which meant that the book never saw its own potential.
Yeah, actually, because the enemies in this book start out, the enemies of America were the complete opposite. You can see how Frank Miller's politics have changed. The enemies of America were big business, were corporations, were
media,
were things inside America with the business. And then suddenly you see at one point, it's the external. There's actually... I think you see a montage of people reacting to the invasion or the fake or the quote-unquote invasion throughout this. And one of them is a Muslim character who you know calls out for Allah. And it's the only panel where you see someone calling in from the outside, shut up.
Yeah.
So you can see Miller's bias becomes evident almost immediately in this book. You know, by the time he gets to his views on Wall Street, Miller's turned against the people. You know, his view of the problem with America is no longer... big business. It's no longer government. It's no longer the big corporation. He hates people now. He's turned against the masses. I mean, this is
for all intents and purposes. For all intents and purposes,
I'm sorry.
He's the 1%.
He is the 1%. That's the problem. The real troubling nature is that this is a guy who breathes rarefied air.
Yeah,
but if you get down really nitty gritty about it, it's also about outside influences, outside immigrants. There's a whole bunch of belly button gazing in the last book, all about the fact that Superman is saying, "I've tried to make this my home."
Yes,
yeah, the depiction.
So it's like
I'm
the outside alien.
Yeah,
and you know I'm not really American.
And there's
the
whole
not
thing
really,
with Supergirl, with a kind of with his daughter rather, who he's kind of like saying, where she's kind of arguing that, you know, we could own this place, man. You know,
and he's saying, you've got to be part of the people, not what... He's basically saying to all immigrants, you've got to come here and become us, not try and bring your own cultures, you know?
With a lot of that, hey.
There's a lot of this going on.
You know, everyone says George Bush is just a puppet.
Yeah.
It's like in this, it's a robot. It's a program.
But as I say, and that completely disappears by the end of the book. By the end of the book... At one point, somebody says, the president might not even be real. And somebody goes, who cares? You know, it's like, he just sidesteps that entire subplot. He doesn't care at that point.
I agree, 100%. And that's, I think, emblematic of the whole story, isn't it? It's that he doesn't really care about what
he's doing. Well, it's because media and big business aren't the bad guys in the second half.
This is meant to be a Batman story. This is meant to be a follow-up to Dark Knight Returns.
And it's not a Batman.
What did you say before, Richard? Batman appears in like what, 10 pages?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, he's not like. You know,
and when he comes in, he's a terrorist and he breaks people's necks.
Can we actually point out that there's more Superman in this book than there is Batman?
Yeah, it reads like a Justice League story almost.
Look, I mean, I think David, you might have said it best when we started. This is essential reading in a sense because
not because it's good,
not because it's good, but it is the sequel to one of the best. Full stop. Comics 101 books.
Ever written. And it's really interesting to have to read them back to back, in particular, because you read the first one and you go, "Wow, that's the most amazing thing I've ever read." And then you roll into this one and you go, "Wow, it's like just what happened." You know,
it's almost like it was intentional.
Well, if it was intentional, I'd say it was a work of brilliance.
Yeah.
But I know it's not.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Mm. I know this is the work of a damaged mind.
You know those crazy preachers that stand on the side of the street.
No, it is. If you go to,
do you ever listen to those guys? Do you ever stop and stand there for 2 hours?
If you go to the Art Gallery of New South Wales on a weekend,
the MCA,
there's somebody standing down there outside.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yes, that's so true.
So Frank Miller, crazy guy in the corner,
absolutely.
And honestly, I think that's what happened. It's a shame because
I still want to see a cage match between Frank Miller and Alan Moore. I'm sorry.
Alan Moore.
we should do Holy Terror next week, guys.
Oh, we have to do Holy Terror.
Yeah. I haven't read Holy Terror.
Well,
let's not do it next week.
Let's take a five-year break.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do next week.
I think Camelot 3000 next week.
Let's do Camelot 3000 next week.
Camelot 3000 next week.
Which we all got there for Christmas, thanks to you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
Let's talk about light. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of light, let's do some feedback.
Let's do it.
Let's do. Is she still on holiday? No, there she is. Hey, girl. Welcome back, kids. Remember, if you want to leave us feedback, you can do it through feedback@behindthepanels.net. Hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels, or hit us up on Twitter, and we'll mention all the Twitter places at the end of the show. But we've had an email here from Withymail. Who I now know to be Jeffrey Witham, who has been talking to us on Twitter. Jeff says, if you don't mind me calling you Jeff, hey guys, love the show. I started at episode 75, which I believe was our Arkham Asylum episode, of Behind the Panels, and continuously listen to 75. Current issues on my radio while I carry out my Sparky work, which, start to finish, is three solid days of Behind the Panels and one day of Movie Club. Also coming back this week, by the way. That's Geek Movie Club, if you're looking for it on iTunes. I love the podcast so much, I search for as many of the pre-longo episodes. Don't let that funny bugger go anywhere.
Thanks, man.
Love Geek Movie Club, great edition. We'll read out that bit on the Geek Movie Club.
Yeah, why not?
Let's talk about that. But he said, I've never read a comic book in my life. I do get into fantasy lore. Enjoyed reading StarCrafts more than the actual game. I do want to start reading all these books you talk of, and I was suggesting, where do you suggest I start? Now,
we've kind of talked about this before in previous issues.
Have a listen back, but we're probably recommending, if you want to get into a Superman book, All-Star Superman, if you want to read a Batman book, maybe start with Year One. I think
Year One's
a really good book to start with. But maybe just go back and listen to some of our old episodes, because we've been covering a lot of Comics 101.
We're going to, I think, because it's one of the things we're planning on doing for our store, which is down the track as well.
Yeah.
But what we might do on the website is we might put a Comics 101
Jeff actually mentions that. He says, I want to visit your new comic book store and purchase my first comic book from you guys.
Well, we better get it open then.
Yep, absolutely. So,
I just to throw out there very quickly that he's also been tweeting us.
Oh, I love this tweet.
And I'm just going to read this out very quickly.
You got it there?
Because it just actually made my heart melt. He basically said, he sent two tweets through. First one says, for someone who's never read a comic book, I hold you guys totally responsible for geekifying me. And then he also wrote, most people want to meet celebrities. I just want to meet these guys. And I think that is just so awesome. And thank you so much.
We'll be floating around at a bunch of conventions. We'll probably be down in Melbourne in July.
Comic-Con
in July. So definitely we'll catch up with you guys down there. So thank you so much for that. I actually have to read out one other little bit of feedback.
Please do. We've been away so long. It's so nice. So.
Which is the other place you can leave feedback for us, which actually makes the most impact for us, which is on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to iTunes and either look up Behind the Panels or the Geek Actually Superfeed, you can find a little ratings and reviews section there. If you leave us a rating or a review there, that helps us get up the iTunes rankings.
In particular, Behind the Panels. We really want to get that up onto the front page.
Now, this one says that we're one of the best comics podcasts on the internet. 5 stars.
Wow.
Of course, this comes from Red Paperman, who I know in his other identity is Nima Afshar.
Nima, you've been on the show. That's cheating.
He says, Richard and Dave have been running the best Australian, in my opinion, one of the best comics podcasts on the internet. Top 5, in my opinion. I listen to a lot of comics podcasts. They both have a background in radio, and it shows. The podcast is tight. Almost 1 full hour of edutainment from 2 guys who know their stuff.
Now three.
Highly recommended.
I met Nima. I'm pretty sure he liked me.
Highly, he likes you. Yeah. He likes you.
Awesome. I like
he's
you
he's
too,
got that. I've been to his place. He's got a little shrine to you.
I gave him some of that.
Highly recommend. A little lock of your hair, I think, was yours. Yeah. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
I always download and listen to their show as soon as it's released. It's up there with Word Balloon and iFanboy's Pick of the Week podcast. Essential. That's really nice words, Nima, despite the fact that you're my friend and I've known you for years. So I think there was another one from the Geek Actually Superfeed, which is the other place that you can leave feedback for us. I think there is now, but I have to quickly change screens to get that up.
He's doing that very adeptly, I gotta say.
He moves pretty quick on that little laptop of his.
This one came in very, very late last year after we'd stopped recording, which was a fun and informative series of podcasts, 5 stars, by... let me see. I think this is either Dinner Dan or DLNA, I'm going to say Dinadan 26. Title pretty much says it all. Initially started listening to the movie podcast for a movie geek take on current releases, but I've now also become a fan of Behind the Panels, which has restored my interest in comics. I now have an ever-growing list of comics of which I'm intending to purchase next time I get to a comic store. Well, if you're in Sydney, you can always come to ours next year, but in the meantime, hit up the internet, Comixology, all those sort of places.
Absolutely.
But that's what we want to hear. We love to hear that people have actually gotten into comics because of us. That's probably the best thing that we could possibly hear.
I can hear a cat right in the background.
No, that was me, I think.
Oh, was that you?
Tapping my feet in excitement.
No, I love it when I love hearing people say they're getting back into comics or they're discovering comics for the first time by listening to what we have to say. I think that is fantastic. I want people to disagree with us. Well,
actually, as I said at the top of the show, I announced it with our old slogan, which was the comic book, like Oprah's Book Club for Geeks, because I thought, start of the new year, we need to reemphasize that. That is essentially what we do.
We're a
book club. You know, we do the news now. We do our what we've been reading this
week. The last half hour is the most important part.
But, you know, it's talking about books as awesome as The Dark Knight Strikes Again is what we do. Now, look, honestly, half of this is just reading books that we haven't read before. Dave said, you've never read Dark Knight Strikes Again. This is your first time. I read this when it came out.
What a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
We've all read this at different times. I read this as it came out, like in 2000.
I read it for the first time about 6 months ago.
There you go.
And I read it again last night. But
for me, it was a big year because, as I think I said on the Quiver show, that was the year I was getting back into comics. Mm-hmm. So for this to come out that year, it was like, wow, new Frank Miller Batman book. This is fantastic.
I like actively avoided it for a long time. I had this aura of
avoided it because Dark Knight Returns is fantastic and everybody told me that the sequel was garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I just avoided it because I thought, well, I don't need to read it. But then, of course, curiosity gets the better of you and you feel like you have to read it. You know,
I do agree, actually. I think before I said that this was not worth reading, but I think it is actually after we talked about it.
Yeah, I think it is worth reading to just see where it went. Mm. Yeah. You know, it's like seeing a bad sequel to a movie just to see what happened.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. I think this is, I think if you can still get the Absolute Dark Knight edition, get it, because, I mean, it's great just to have Dark Knight Returns in that size. Mm. And you can actually read it as one complete piece.
Yeah.
And see how he's shifted over the course of 15 years. It's a really interesting, I think, experiment on that level anyway, just to see how a writer's views change.
And we should make this very clear. We are all fans of Frank Miller.
Yes.
Post and pre this book.
Oh, yeah. It's like Scott Snyder before.
It's like some Frank Miller stuff from today and go, that's Frank Miller.
In fact, he did the cover that he did for Detective Comics 27. Some people have ragged on it, but I was talking to the aforementioned Nima about this not too long ago, and he's saying there's just something iconic about a Miller image.
Mm.
You know, even the cover to this Dark Knight, Absolute Dark Knight, you look at that Batman on the cover, just the simplicity of it with a bit of ink and paint splattered
across
that. In fact,
images have influenced people all the way through
constantly.
The years. Think about the latest Batman, this latest Snyder Batman. There's that one shot of him on the power line looking through the window with the lightning in the background. Yeah. You go, that is such a Miller image.
Definitely.
You know, that it's influenced artists all the way across.
Look,
you know?
There's no doubting Miller's influence or his decline for that matter, but he's still an interesting voice in comics, and I really hope to see him write and draw something.
Now, can I ask you, very, very quickly, Frank Miller's sequel to 300 that has been turned into a movie?
Yeah, didn't actually come out.
Are they planning on releasing this?
I don't know what's happening with it. I don't know if he ever finished it. The closest you can get is in the first issue of the new Dark Horse Presents. There's some pages of it in that. That was the first time we saw it. It's interesting.
I want them to release this.
But that's all we've seen of it.
So. Yeah, I was just curious because, and the other thing I was very curious about this week, and we'll just throw this out there because we're about out of time. Very quickly, though, just as a piece of information for people, there is no issue 15 of Hawkeye.
No, I drove myself mad. So I was organizing my comics this weekend. It's a long weekend in Australia, looking for issue 13 and 15. Now, 13 I just misplaced.
Yep.
And I was like, 15's got to be here. What the hell have I done with it? And then suddenly I come over here and say, I can't find 15. You go, there was no 15. No. But I've got 16.
Yeah, I found out through Comixology. You found out through another source afterwards. Apparently they've skipped an issue and they've just released 16. 15 will be coming. It's just not out yet. So if you're pulling your hair out looking for 15, it doesn't exist at this point.
Okay, we're going to wrap this puppy up. As we said, next week we're doing the classic Camelot 3000.
Through DC,
DC book, which David McVeigh nicely gave us for Christmas. So we'll be doing that.
We'll
shortly.
Talk about this because there's very interesting talking points on this.
Yeah,
one.
So I think that's about a 12-issue maxi series.
It was a 12-issue maxi series, and it was one of those ones that had massive delays as it was being written. So,
So this is classic 80s DC,
and it's recently been re-released in a big, beautiful reprint.
Yeah,
and
so it looks lovely.
So go out and find that at bookstores.
Looking forward to doing that. Until then, you can find me on behindthepanels.net and on Twitter at DVDBits,
and you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me at damngoodcup.com or on Twitter at Dave Longo.
So until next week when we do Camel Cop.
Camel Cop.
I like to push the Pramalot. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels.